Question for our listeners. Which automaker assembles the most vehicles in the country? Here's a hint. It's the same one that employs the most hourly workers in the country, and the answer is Ford. That's not a coincidence. It's a commitment. A commitment your local Ford stores share. And that is why Ford is now offering employee pricing across their full lineup of vehicles, which means you pay what they pay. So visit your local Ford stores today to take advantage of this great opportunity. Ford Motor Company. From America, for America.
If you're ready for a new job, let Express Employment Professionals help you. Express is already hiring for summer jobs in a variety of industries. Job seekers never pay a fee at Express. Go to expresspros.com to find your location. That's expresspros.com.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
I know I'm as good, if not better, than that guy.
Well, that was loud out to right center, and that will go over the head of Soto, and Tucker gets the Cubs on the board. It is 5-1.
It's Saturday Suckage on 670 The Score.
Marquee bringing us Kyle Tucker's home run. Boog. Is that Boog? Boog Shambi. Yep. And Kyle Tucker. 10-plus home runs, 10-plus stolen bases. The only other player with that combination in the major leagues is Shohei Ohtani.
It's pretty good.
Not Shohei Crow Armstrong. Shohei Ohtani. And so there you go. Something else they have in common is that neither of them are signed with the Cubs next year. Just thought I'd bring that up. Welcome and welcome back. Saturday Suckage. I'm Steve Rosenblum. We are going back to our guest line. Joining me on the Circa Resort and Casino Hotline is Tony Andracki of Marquee, CircaLasVegas.com. Tony, thanks for coming on today. Well, quite a day. The Cubs have a rookie pitcher they're very proud of, and he's making his debut, and they're so proud they won't let him start the game. So what do you know and why? What is going on with Cade Horton's alleged debut?
It's definitely an interesting situation. It's Brad Keller will start, and Cade Horton probably, you know, anticipate that he will pitch at some point. What they could do is just have a simple, you know, Keller as the opener, you know, pitch the first inning, and Cade come in for the second inning, maybe go, you know, 3-4, maybe even as many as 5 innings if he's pitching well. I think the thing of this is we don't really know, and you know, some of this, I'm sure, is gamesmanship because we don't know, so the Mets don't know. So it's hard to kind of game plan against it. I think there's a variety of different options the Cubs can go with here.
My guest is Tony Andracki of Marquee. Now, you wrote about it. You worked through it as word of Cade Horton's ascension was being disseminated. And you wrote that they could have gone with a bullpen day, but started with Chris Flexen. So they're kind of going with a bullpen day. But not allowing Cade Horton to make his start at Wrigley Field against the Marlins, certainly a lesser team than the Mets. And you work through it. So share with the class the ups, the downs, the pros, the cons of letting him make his debut in New York versus letting him make his debut in Wrigley.
Yeah, so I think, you know, the Cubs were really they definitely mentioned, you know, like Jed Hoyer, Craig Counsell, even Tommy Hotovy talked, and they didn't want to push back or adjust the rest of the rotation with Shota Imanaga's injury. So even though they had the off day on Thursday this past week, and you know the coming week they have an off day on Thursday again, they didn't want to move things around and tinker and have Jameson Taillon move back a day or Matthew Boyd move up a day. And either way, they knew they were going to have to fill, you know, at least a couple of starts while Shota is on the IL. So, yeah, it really the kind of option was, do you have Cade Horton come up and pitch Saturday in New York, or do you have him make his major league debut the following weekend, most likely on Friday, against the White Sox, you know, one of the worst offenses and worst teams in baseball at Wrigley Field. So that was some of the things they were kind of working through. And part of it kind of depended on the games that happened against the Giants at Wrigley, where, you know, the bullpen was needed. Ben Brown didn't go deep in the game on Wednesday, and they needed Flexen to come out and work back-to-back days, not something he has not done much. You know, he's been mostly a starter throughout his career, his big league career, certainly. So, yeah, he worked Tuesday and Wednesday because Tuesday was an extra innings game. But, yeah, you know, I think between that and the fact that Cade Horton had been pitching well, it made sense to bring him up. They decided that, you know, in New York, there was kind of two schools of thought. New York against the Mets in a major market and a really, really good offense, one of the best teams in the National League. Do you face them, or do you face, you know, have him make his debut at Wrigley with all the kind of fanfare, with the crowd, with the way extra media attention and 40-plus thousand people? You know, what's more pressure? Is it New York and Chicago? You know, to me, it's a little bit of like six of one, half dozen of another. So they kind of address the team need now, have him pitching against the Mets at some point, most likely again today. And I think, too, you know, given that the top of the Mets order with Soto, with Lindor, with Alonso, maybe they just, you know, the hope is Keller gets those three guys out to start, and then Cade Horton has a softer, easier landing and, you know, kind of starts with Brandon Nimmo or the four or five spots in the Mets order and can get the first, you know, six or so hitters out before he really gets into, like, the meat of the Mets order.
You're going to know who this guy is if you'd have started him, right? Get him out there. Whatever. You know, I mean, it's not it. You're not pitching for your life. This is not the Hunger Games where you're dead if you're wrong. You are going to be here, kid, one way or another. And here you go. Here's how you met Matt. You've always wanted to play against the best. Here's the best. So I really don't understand this. And your point about Flexen coming on in consecutive days is all the more reason to keep Keller in the bullpen, let him help there because the bullpen's been messy, and let Horton start. Again, there's nothing that tells me. The only thing that tells me you have a reason for putting him second, if that's where he's going to go, we don't even know that's for sure. The only reason it tells me is that he's a kid, 23. To me, everybody's a kid, I guess. But he's a rookie who, the way the Iowa Cubs pitching coach was telling inside the clubhouse, Bruce Levine and David Haugh, that he... Even in spring training games, he would grind. You would see him, hands at his head, and he would grind and he would tighten up. And that was spring training. And here it would be in New York against the Mets, major league debut. And I think I have no idea if it's possible the Cubs do this kind of stuff. But if you know your guy well enough and you say, yeah, Brad Keller's going to start. And then an hour before the game, you go, you know what? Keller's not going. We need him in the bullpen. You're going to start, Cade. So they give him less time to grind over this, and he's going to go out and not have time to panic and grind on it and make himself so tight. The Cubs do that kind of stuff?
Yeah, I mean, obviously they're trying to give him, like, the easiest landing possible. And you're right in the sense of, you know, like getting tight, feeling anxiety. Obviously I'm sure that, you know, they've talked to him and explained to him the plan, even if we don't know it publicly. I think about myself, if I were a player in the big leagues, which obviously I'm not and never have been, but I feel like to me, you know, something, if I'm used to starting all the time, starting would be easier versus coming out of a bullpen, something that I've had, you know, basically no experience in at all in my entire baseball playing career. You know, it feels like it's almost like an extra inning to, like, get nervous, right? Or to let those nerves kind of settle in versus doing something that is very comfortable and going out there and starting. So, yeah, I am very, very curious to see how this all plays out because Cubs are obviously doing this, you know, for a reason. They've thought about this a lot. They've deliberated over this, you know, between front office, coaching staff, evaluating the rest of the pitching staff and so on. And this was what they landed on. So, but I am curious to see just because, you know, I understand if you don't want him to face, like, the Mets have the top three hitters and maybe the best in baseball the way they're playing with Lindor, Soto, Alonso. So I get wanting to avoid them, but what if Keller goes out and, you know, gives up a couple of runs or ends up having to face, you know, six or seven hitters in the first inning and then Cade comes in the second and it's, you know, in his first inning is already facing the top of the order again. Or, you know, and because you would want – the Cubs aren't anticipating that Cade Horton is going to come out and just pitch an inning or two, like – ideally, he would be the bulk guy today and would still throw anywhere from 3 to 5 innings So he's going to face the top of the order anyway. So, I mean, to me, you know, there's definitely an element of this that maybe they are getting a little too cute with all this. But again, they've thought about this a lot and they have, you know, their idea of how this is all going to kind of play out. And I'm really just curious to see how it actually does play out in reality.
My guest is Tony Andracki of Marquee Sports Network, home of the Cubs. We're talking Cubs and Mets, and Cade Horton is expected to make his debut. We're just not sure how that's going to play off. But the Cubs this year have been this odd thing of desperate need of a third baseman. Oh, by the way, their right fielder and Shohei Ohtani are the only two people with 10 home runs and 10 stolen bases. The Cubs are hitting for more power and running more, and Kyle Tucker's a great example of that. So you're seeing, well, let me say that. I think I'm seeing Craig Counsell manage differently and having the players to do that. What are you seeing from the manager, and how is it translating onto the field?
Yeah, you know what? I don't know that Counsell's managing differently. I think the Tucker effect, as you just touched on, has this intangible trickle-down effect on the rest of the lineup. And that was why Jed Hoyer was, you know, like astutely pointed out last year that one of the things the Cubs were missing was star power. And he didn't phrase it as star power. He said as consolidation of war, meaning players like, you know, Kyle Tucker or Shohei or Bobby Witt Jr. or Pete Alonso and Juan Soto, like singular players who are, you know, 5, 6, 7 war players that, you know, you are getting elite production out of it, because it just, it filters down through the rest of the team. And what the Cubs have been the last few years, really since trading away the likes of Rizzo, Bryant, Javi, is they've been this combination. They've been just compiling a bunch of players to kind of try to get the same production. And Cody Bellinger was great for, you know, a 2-3 month stretch in 2023, but last year, you know, they didn't have that star player. They were trying to piece it together with, you know, Bellinger and Seiya and Bush and Christopher Morel at times, or Isaac Paredes at other times. Like, they didn't have that one guy who comes out and is clearly the most feared hitter in the entire lineup from the other team. The guy that teams make pitching changes gear around and have, you know, pregame, preseries meetings. And it's like, we can't let that guy beat us. And yet Kyle Tucker has been going out there and beating other teams. I mean, he had that, you know, saw one pitch after the pitching change against the Giants in extra innings on Tuesday and tied the game with a 2-out single up the middle. So, you know, and he's had some really big home runs. As you mentioned, the stolen bases from him have kind of even fallen under the radar. But the fact that the Cubs are getting such great production from him, hitting in the 2 spot in the order, it takes pressure off the others. He's always on base so that, you know, folks behind him like Seiya Suzuki or Michael Bush always have somebody on base, you know, behind him. Giving Ian Happ some better pitches to hit and allowing him to, you know, not have so much pressure on himself and atop of the order. Like, there's this intangible effect that we can't quite quantify. There's no real stat for, but I think what we've seen from the offense and why the Cubs offense has been really good is just because of a guy like that, allowing the rest of the players in the lineup to kind of take steps forward. And then we've also seen guys take steps forward. Michael Bush has been really good, really underrated, I think, this year. And PCA is turning into a star before our eyes. So I think all of that has just led to this good offense. And honestly, just more guys on base creating more opportunities to steal bases. And so I don't think Council's really changed much. I think it's just that the guys are kind of performing and there's more opportunities to steal bases. And clearly they're just hitting the ball out of the ballpark more. And the way Wrigley played last year and just the way the Cubs offense was, they didn't have this instant offense power the way they do this year.
Tony Andracki, Marquee, is my guest. We're talking Cubs baseball here, Cubs and Mets tonight. You'll hear it on the score. Am I the only one who just gobsmacked by Carson Kelly and what he's doing?
No, I am as well. I mean, the guy has like 740 slugging percentage, and we're on Mother's Day weekend, you know, like almost, I think we're like a quarter of the way through the season right now. So I can't believe it, really, seriously. And like, he's at the point where, but if he continues on this pace, the Cubs had, I can't remember if it was 13 or 14 homers from the catching position all of last year. And he's, you know, on pace to do that right now, like before June even hits alone. So the production from the catching position, mainly because of him, but also Miguel Amaya has really hit well. And both have thrown base runners out pretty well, called good games. Like, it's completely night and day difference, the production that we're seeing from the Cubs catchers this year compared to last year. But yeah, it's incredible. I mean, Carson Kelly, I know he's made swing changes and You know, my colleague Elise Menaker had a great breakdown about, you know, a few weeks ago about how Carson Kelly studied Barry Bonds in the offseason and kind of remodeled his swing and approach to the plate a bit. And honestly, he looks like the right-handed catching version of Barry Bonds this season.
Well, okay, without the cream and the clear, that'd be great. But everybody become suspect when you're suddenly hitting home runs. I didn't see this coming. I had hoped for Shohei Crow Armstrong to do what he did or what he is doing, and he'll have a slump because players always do that. And at the same time where he might be having it now or might he certainly not, certainly he's falling off this incredible streak that he was on before. Dansby Swanson is getting better, getting back to being the guy the Cubs paid all that money for, and it seemed to be simple changes, and he seems to be right. And when you have guys like PCA and Dansby Swanson, guys you had hoped to be near the top of the lineup because of whether it's speed or line drive hitting or whatever their consistency was in Dansby Swanson's case, but they're producing at the bottom, which makes your lineup even longer. What do you see Council doing? What has he said about that? When your lineup, the Cubs lineup looks a lot longer than we've seen it in recent years. So what do you think his inclination is with guys like PCA and Dansby Swanson getting to a form that everyone hoped for and expected?
Yeah, I mean, it is a good point that this lineup does look longer, and because for at least the first half of last season, the 7 through 9 spot, the Cubs got like no production out of that, those three spots in the order for almost, you know, at over a half a season, a third of the lineup wasn't producing at all because the catching position struggled. And, you know, Dansby was hitting down there and PCA for a good chunk was hitting down there. And, you know, until he kind of turned things on the last couple months of the season. So that has also been night and day difference. And a big reason why the Cubs still are the best offense in baseball in terms of runs per game, but they've faced some good pitching and stuff recently. And, I mean, the hope certainly from the Cubs is that when a guy like, you know, PCA maybe, gets a little bit on a cold streak here, he was on such a hot streak for a couple weeks before that, that guys like Dansby, you know, pick him up. And, same kind of thing, you know, like Seiya's been struggling a little bit, but, you know, if guys like Tucker and Bush around him are hitting home runs, like that was the main difference last year is, the Cubs, right around this time, they had like a 6-week stretch where like 8 or 9 guys were all slumping at the same time. And that you just can't have that happen. That's ultimately why the Cubs didn't make the playoffs last year. And right now what they're hoping and what usually transpires in baseball seasons is, you know, good teams have like 2 or 3 guys that are going well at a time and 2 or 3 guys that are struggling. And you kind of, they kind of mix and match all of those guys and you maybe base the batting order around it. And what I will say, though, from the offense and maybe going back to the point about Council is I feel like Council and the Cubs have been very aggressive this year. Like Matt Shaw was struggling at third. April 15th, they send him down. Like, you know, they realize this is a big year and in some ways a make or break year. They're like, we can't just focus on development. We got to send this guy down, get him right, you know, hopefully call him back and have him be a big part of our lineup the rest of the season. But then also, you know, Dansby, hey, he's struggling. We can't just stick him in the 5 spot and let him figure it out. We got to bump him down to 4 or down to 8, sorry, move Carson Kelly up to 4 or 5 and get the most out of this lineup. And I think they've, you know, they deserve credit for being aggressive and for maximizing the group. And oh, by the way, you know, the second Dansby was bumped down to the 8 spot in the order, he's hitting like 412 since then. So, you know, it's worked out. And Carson Kelly, I think the second at bat in the cleanup spot hit a home run. So, their aggressiveness has paid off, but I think they're pulling some of the right strings right now.
Tony, thank you for joining me today. We'll all be interested to see how this evening gets handled against the Mets, who pitches when, and how it works out. And the Cubs facing a really good team or a team with a good record, and they need to perform against that. They certainly own the NL West. It's time to do that against the NL East. Thank you for your time. Appreciate it.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
Tony Andracki of Marquee. And he's right. You know, he's talking about the way the Cubs were making moves and the similarity with, okay, Matt Shaw, sorry, not you, not now, maybe later. And having no real patience and changing the lineup the way he changed it, even with guys, proud veteran like Dansby Swanson. If you go back to 2015, when Joe Maddon announced with his moves that the Cubs were playing for a playoff spot. It was in August against the Giants. He benched Starling Castro and put Addison Russell at short. He gave Jason Hamill four innings. Didn't look well enough. Yanked him in the fourth inning, fifth inning, whatever it was. It was a time where Jason Hamill goes, "Are you bleeping kidding me?" And that's what Council and Hoyer are doing. So I'm even more surprised that Cade Horton isn't starting. Because with Steele down and Shota Imanaga down, Jed Hoyer has to make a trade. He has to find a pitcher somewhere. It's impossible to make a trade when everybody knows you need to make a trade. You're going to give up way too much. You're not going to get what you want. If you bring up your own guy and he starts and he excels and he gives you something to get you to the fifth inning, sixth inning, where you have a chance to win, then the pressure's off. Suddenly, Jed can have trade talks of, no, we're not desperate. I don't know. I don't know why they're doing what they're doing with Cade Horton. And it may turn out he starts some way, some story, some plan, some scheme, some kind of happenstance. But that seems to be the way it should have gone. Find out what he's got. Don't paint him as weak. The Cubs are painting their own guy as weak, emotionally weak, mentally weak. Oh, no, he can't play the Mets in New York. No, he can't start. He can't. Look at that lineup. Yeah. Look at that lineup. Look at all the lineups. What are you going to do if you get to the World Series? What if you, or the NLCS, and you face the Dodgers? Sorry, you won't pitch to the first eight batters. That ninth batter, though, we got you. The bottom of the order, you can come in there. I mean, it's just crazy. I don't care if it's his debut or not. And in fact, I can make the argument that you'd rather have him facing the top of the Mets order instead of Brad Keller, and here's why. The Mets have seen Brad Keller. There's a lot of tape. There's a lot of scouting on him. There's not much on Cade Horton. Major League pit players haven't really seen him. That would give him the advantage. Throw strikes, kid. See how you do. Before I take a break, I want to brag on us. Us being Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. Last night, the Chicago Headline Club presented the Peter Lisagor Awards. The name may not mean anything to you. Peter Lisagor was a Washington bureau chief of the Daily News from 59 to 76. That's a long time to be a respected journalist. He was respected, one of the best known in the United States. The Lisagors, Chicago, Illinois state organization, they recognized Chicago's best journalism from across the media spectrum, and the Score took home one of the prizes. The plaque lists credits Mitch Rosen, Lawrence Holmes, Chris Tannehill, and Ryan Porth. It's for news reporting. Lawrence Holmes interviewed Brandon Johnson and unmasked the mayor as someone without a clue, but was serving as Kevin Warren's footman with a talk of keeping the Bears in Soldier Field. Tanny edited the piece, and it won. It was excellent work by excellent people, talk radio pros. They're excellent professionally. They're excellent humans. I am proud to be able to report their deserved accomplishment, proud to be on their team. Go us. Score wins a Lisagor Award for news reporting. Strong, hard questions asked, weak answers given, edited in the way that was fair and revealing. Lawrence, Tanny, good job. I'm Steve Rosenblum, Saturday Suckage. Now, the opposite of a good job would be George McCaskey, full of BS, and a lot of other NFL owners, too. Something's been bugging me. I'll get to that after this break. I'm Steve Rosenblum, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
Question for our listeners. Which automaker assembles the most vehicles in the country? Here's a hint. It's the same one that employs the most hourly workers in the country, and the answer is Ford. That's not a coincidence. It's a commitment. A commitment your local Ford stores share. And that is why Ford is now offering employee pricing across their full lineup of vehicles, which means you pay what they pay. So visit your local Ford stores today to take advantage of this great opportunity. Ford Motor Company. From America for America.
If you're ready for a new job, let Express Employment Professionals help you. Express is already hiring for summer jobs in a variety of industries. Job seekers never pay a fee at Express. Go to expresspros.com to find your location. That's expresspros.com.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
This season, let your shoes do the talking. Designer Shoe Warehouse is packed with fresh styles that speak to your whole vibe, without saying a word. From cool sneakers that look good with everything, to easy sandals you'll want to wear on repeat, DSW has you covered. Find a shoe for every you from the brands you love, like Birkenstock, Nike, Adidas, New Balance, and more. Head to your DSW store or visit DSW.com today.
Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
It's Saturday Suckage on 670 The Score.
Welcome in, welcome back. Steve Rosenblum, your host, your head suckageer, as it were. I suck so you don't have to. Talking about the Cubs and the Mets, let me tell you this. Tonight, the Cubs and Mets continue their series from New York. Pregame coverage begins at 5:40 p.m. First pitch is 6:15. The only local broadcast of tonight's game can be heard on The Score and on the Southwest Airlines Cubs radio network. So I mentioned before the break, something's bugging me for a while. I want to get to it. George McCaskey is just full of it. He's weak and without facts, and he pretty much admits he's without facts. And this is all going back to talking about the tush push and the weenie Packers motion to ban it. McCaskey was at the NFL owners meeting a while back. Quote, I know league officials say we don't have sufficient injury data, but to us it appears to be inherently an unsafe play. Really? We don't know anything, but it looks inherently unsafe. You know what's inherently unsafe, George? The game of football. You were just so full of crap, you and everybody else. McCaskey went on to say the push play will lead to a broader examination of whether that general rule should be brought back. We think it should be an enhancement to the game to make it safer for players. He just stepped in a pile of fecal matter. It's just, he is so full of it. Every NFL owner is. Football itself is inherently brain damaging. The $6.4 billion valuation on the McCaskey family business is based on something inherently unsafe. There's brain damage on every play. Times 10. And that's even with a crappy Bears offensive line. They're still banging helmets. They want 20 games, the NFL does. But you're worried about a tush push, which has no data. You have all the data and all the CTE reports about playing football, and you now want more games, and you want Thursday games. So we're going to double the brain damage. With other body parts, players always describe it as like walking away from a car wreck. There's no data on tush-push injuries. We do have data on the weenie hood of the Bears and other similar NFL owners. The Bears sided with the Packers, which should have told you how wrong they are to start with. It is an effective play. It's unstoppable when done right, the tush push. Saquon Barkley, I love this. He's talking about the tush push at the Met Gala, as one does. 2,000 yards. the man the Eagles got because they got rid of DeAndre Swift, hint, hint, Ryan Poles, Ben Johnson, led the Eagles to a Super Bowl title, and he's at the Met Gala, and he's talking, he says, if you don't like it, get better at stopping it. He could have stopped there, period. Full stop. That's it. Barkley went on, it's not like a play that we could only do, that only we could do. Everybody does it. Everyone tries it. We're just super successful at it. Now, this is going to come up in a couple weeks. The NFL owners are going to revisit it, their spring meeting in Minnesota, May 20th and 21st. Understand this. Everything they say about the tush push is just BS. Starting with McCaskey, ending with McCaskey, wherever you want to go, it's a load of crap. NFL owners do not care about player safety, except the quarterback. That's it. Because that's the most important person in the football building, the quarterback. The rest, we don't need you. If they cared about player safety, they would fold the league. The game inherently is unsafe. It causes brain damage. Don't tell me you care about player safety when you want to add another game, two more games, when you want to add more Thursday games, when you don't care about player safety. You can't. It's impossible. You can't make this game safer. And one more thing. I just want to say that those images of me at the Met Gala were AI generated.
Oh, that wasn't you?
No. Aww. I mean, come on. If I'm going to go backless, it would be on the bottom.
You're right. That's you.
I'm Steve Rosenblum, Saturday Suckage. I'm going to take a break. When I come back, talk with Ricky O'Donnell of SB Nation. Giannis, a bull, yes or no? We got to know. We got to get the right answer. Ricky knows. Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Question for our listeners. Which automaker assembles the most vehicles in the country? Here's a hint. It's the same one that employs the most hourly workers in the country, and the answer is Ford. That's not a coincidence. It's a commitment. A commitment your local Ford stores share. And that is why Ford is now offering employee pricing across their full lineup of vehicles, which means you pay what they pay. So visit your local Ford stores today to take advantage of this great opportunity. Ford Motor Company. From America for America.
Looking for a job is lonely. Endless searching, phone calls that go nowhere, applications that vanish into thin air. What if you could link with dozens of local companies who are hiring right now with just one connection? That's Express Employment Professionals. Find us at expresspros.com. One connection, endless opportunities, and no fees ever for job seekers. Express Employment Professionals. ExpressPros.com.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
At Designer Shoe Warehouse, we believe that shoes are an important part of, well,
everything. From first steps to first dates, from all-nighters to all-time personal bests.
From building pillow forts to building a life.
For all the big and small moments that make up your whole world, DSW is there. And we've got just the shoes. Find a shoe for every you from brands you love at brag-worthy prices at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
Giannis, you've always kind of stated about wanting to win and win championships and win a second championship and how important it is to you. Do you think that you can still win that second championship here in Milwaukee after a third straight first-round exit?
Look, I'm not gonna do this. I'm not gonna do this. I know how this is gonna, whatever I say, I know how it's gonna translate. I don't know, man. I wish I was still playing. I wish I was still competing and going back to Milwaukee. I don't know.
Giannis. After Milwaukee was eliminated yet again, this time by the Pacers, first round, bye-bye. About his future in Milwaukee. Can you really win here? He said he wanted to win here. I wanted to win there so I could watch him. Remember that video, him driving through, ordering 50-piece magnet? Wait, you want 50? Who are you? I'm the guy who just won. This is his celebratory morning after meal. Was a 50-piece, 50, right, McDonald's, right?
Yeah, it was in the drive-thru and everything.
50 yeah. Nuggets, yeah. Welcome and welcome back to Saturday Suckage. I'm Steve Rosenblum. Now joining me on the Circa Sports Illinois Hotline is Ricky O'Donnell of SB Nation. Download the Circa app today. And Ricky was writing about, a couple weeks ago, he was writing about, okay, here are all the places Giannis could go. Oh, I'll read this. Hey, Ricky knows what he's talking about. And just scroll down and go, okay, well, yeah, them, sure, yeah, yeah. We got your Lakers, of course, because they're in the Spurs. Well, that's the Knicks. Hate to see that. Where are the Bulls, Ricky?
Well, I don't think the Bulls are really in a position to trade for a 30-year-old superstar like Giannis at this point in their rebuild, because Giannis here would face a very similar problem that he has currently in Milwaukee, which is that the supporting cast just isn't good enough for him to win at the highest levels of the league. One interesting trend we've seen in the NBA playoffs so far is that the NBA is no longer really a sport dependent on your best player, where the best player is powering winning. That's not really the case these days in this era of the league. At this point, it's all about your weakest link, how good your depth is, if there's any places for the opposing team to target and attack when they have the ball on offense. So in this era of the NBA, I just don't see a scenario where the Bulls would be a true contender, even with a player as great as Giannis, who's still a top three player in the world. And really, what the Bulls need to do is go the other way and try to find, you know, the 19 or 20 year old version of Giannis in the draft to really have this rebuild take the next step.
Have you seen any indication that Arturis Karnišević could do that?
Well, it's going to be difficult because he chose not to prioritize his lottery odds this season, and instead went after the low hanging fruit of the number 8 seed in the East. We saw what happened to the Miami Heat once they got that 8 seed. They got absolutely blasted in historic fashion by the Cleveland Cavaliers. That's the prize Arturis was chasing the entire season. Instead, the Heat dominated the Bulls in the play-in tournament, ended the Bulls season. So it's going to be difficult to find a franchise player with a number 12 overall pick. If that's where the Bulls land in Monday night's lottery. I will say Arturis did pretty well with the number 11 pick last year. Matis Bezalis is, to me, the most exciting development going on with the Bulls right now. And there have been superstar players drafted around that range over the last 10 years. Take, for example, the likely NBA MVP, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. I think he was the 11th or 12th pick the year the Bulls took Wendell Carter Jr. I think that was 2017 or 2018. So it can happen. It's just difficult. And that's basically what the Bulls are faced with right now. It's a team lacking a true superstar. They have some decent depth, but you still need to get that top guy to really have a chance to take a leap in the playoffs. And that's the biggest thing going around the Bulls right now. Until they have that guy, they're going to be searching for him.
My guest is Ricky O'Donnell, SB Nation. He is the director of programming. Listen to him, people. He knows basketball. And that's what we're talking, Bulls basketball. If you're talking about NBA teams going after the weakest link as a way of neutralizing the best player on that team, it would seem, if you were looking at the Bulls, imagining them as a playoff team at some point, when they get there, there will have to be a star, right? You need a star to get into the playoffs, right? Don't you?
And, absolutely, yeah. You still need a star. And for the Bulls, I would say, you know, who would be the weakest link? They got too many to choose from right now. Josh Giddey, not a very good defensive player. Kobe White, not a very good defensive player. Nikola Vucevic, that's free buckets at the rim all day at this stage of Vuce's career. So, yeah, the Bulls are lacking, certainly, you know, the franchise star to help them take the next step. but also just the infrastructure of this team to this point is still pretty faulty. I mean, there's a lot of potential weaknesses in a defense that you could target for the Bulls. Credit to Billy Donovan for, I think the Bulls finished 19th or 20th in defensive rating this year. Not bad, given their personnel. A lot of people thought they would be dead last in the league entering the season. But the playoffs are a different ballgame. It's a different style of play. You know, the Bulls' super up-tempo offense, I wouldn't really say that's built for playoff success. The game slows down, becomes more physical in the postseason, as we've seen in this amazing second round so far. So it's the same story as always with the Bulls. They got a lot of work to do before they're ready to compete. And are they even really trying to be truly competitive, meaning competing for a spot in the NBA Finals, not the number eight seed? It doesn't really seem like it right now.
How much will they be held back by Patrick Williams' contract and Patrick Williams having to play because of that contract?
Yeah, Patrick Williams did not have a very good first season after signing that five-year, $90 million deal. It's going to pay him $18 million a year. He's got four more years left on that now. And it certainly looks like a bad contract, absolutely. That number isn't a devastating number to me just because the NBA salary cap keeps going up. Certainly a bad contract, and if the Bulls could offload it this offseason, which I'm skeptical that they can, it would be in their best interest just to move off the deal because Pat makes so much money. I think if you want to talk yourself into like an optimist case for Patrick Williams, which why would you? He's just not very good, flat out. But he did spend all of last offseason recovering instead of training, coming off foot surgery. So the pie in the sky chance for Patrick Williams to finally turn into, I don't know, at least a useful 3-and-D guy. He doesn't need to be an all-star, but at least give us someone who can defend a little bit and hit an open shot. You know, maybe that could happen this summer when he has the summer to train instead of recover from an injury, which was the case a year ago.
I don't know who they'd have where they wouldn't have to mitigate the trade. If you want to get rid of Patrick Williams, given that salary and given the way he's played, you know, that's a bad decision by the Bulls. You'd have to give up something good or defray the cost or something like that. Who do they have that they could trade that wouldn't put them in a position where you also got to add this, where they're not trying to claw back something or giving up something that they really like or that might help them? Is it Kobe White?
Yeah, probably Kobe and Io. Both of those guys, I believe, have 1 year left on their current contracts, and then they're both on very team-friendly deals right now. You know, we could say Arturis badly overpaid Patrick Williams, which he did. He also got Kobe and Io for extremely team-friendly contracts. So now those are about to expire. The Bulls are going to have to make a decision, like, do we want to pay Kobe White $30 million a year or $25 million a year or whatever it's going to take to keep him? Right now, they can only offer him extension worth, you know, a certain percentage of what he's currently making, and Kobe probably won't even take that deal. So if the Bulls extend Kobe a max offer this summer, I don't think he's going to take it because he'll probably get more on the open market a year from now. He's at a point in his career where he should be betting on himself. So, yeah, the Bulls could very likely, I think, trade Kobe White or Io DeSumo. At least that would be in their best interest. But we know Arturis Karnišovas from watching him over the last 4 or 5 years here. This man is paralyzed by fear of making a trade. Every single transaction cycle, this dude just sits on his hands and doesn't really do much, aside from when he finally got rid of Zach LaVine for the grand prize of getting his top 10 protected first-round pick back, which he should have been able to keep anyway. So the Bulls are going to have to make some tough decisions here if they really do want to take the next step. But Arturis asked the fans for patience at his end-of-the-year press conference. I would ask Arturis for patience himself. Currently, he's running this rebuild like he's trying to take shortcuts all over the place to get the team back to quote-unquote competitive levels. Well, they're not really competing for anything. They're competing for the 8 seed in the JV conference. So Arturis needs to take a longer view of this rebuild, realize you need stars, you need to build, you know, a sound team full of two-way players. And to me, you do that by prioritizing your draft position, especially ahead of a loaded 2026 NBA draft with three potential number one overall picks, including Cameron Boozer, the son of Carlos Boozer. So that's what I would like to see the Bulls do in terms of their long-term approach to this rebuild. I'd like it to be a little more patient, not try to take shortcuts by getting players, young players with experience, as Arturis likes to say in his media availability. But they are a long, long way from competing at the top of the league.
My guest is Ricky O'Donnell, SB Nation, writes about basketball, director of programming for SB Nation. What have you seen in the playoffs? You know, you talked about the change that targeting the weakest part. It's not your best player. It's your weakest link on the floor at any one time. And they just keep hammering that until you prove you can, until you're forced to change it or prove you can stop it. So what have you seen in the playoffs as it applies to the Bulls? They can't even make the playoffs, but on the off chance they ever do, what will they see there? How prepared will they be for that?
Yeah, the game's just so much slower and so much more physical. What would be a foul during the regular season, the refs just let it go in the playoffs. And honestly, it's a much better brand of basketball. The playoffs have been totally compelling during a year when, you know, a lot of fans thought that, you know, the NBA is slipping, the ratings are down, it's not a good product anymore. Playoffs have been incredible. And I think in part it's because it's harder to foul bait. You know, if you're trying to flop or get a call, it's tough to do. The refs might not always give it to you. And so you got to just play through contact. And then it's more about creation in settled down half court situations rather than just run and gun during the regular season. And the Bulls were the fastest tempo team in the year, fastest tempo team in the league this year. They wanted to push the pace the entire season. I think that was a pretty good way for them to maximize whatever potential their team had during the regular season. But in the playoffs, I just don't think that's going to fly. You need more physicality. You need truly skilled half-court playmakers, and I just don't think the Bulls are there yet.
So you don't think Josh Giddey can slow it down? He can deal in the half court. Kobe White would have trouble doing that, but if the ball is in Josh's hands, then I see him making some very good decisions. Your point about the Bulls running, Billy got them running. That's the way they wanted to play at the fastest pace and try to tire teams out. And then teams are going to be, if they're allowed to play physical, the Bulls would just get beat up. But what about, let's isolate Giddey in the half court from what you saw this year and executing that in the playoffs. Give me that scouting report, Ricky.
Yeah. Well, I think that what we saw in the play-in tournament is very similar to what we saw in last year's playoffs when Josh Giddey was a member of the Oklahoma City Thunder, which is other teams are going to guard him by putting their center on, and they're going to dare him to shoot from the outside. And to this point in his career, Giddey hasn't really been able to beat that. Now, Giddey did just have the best three-point shooting season of his career, shot 37.5% from three, actually started to make a few pull-ups. That's encouraging. He still doesn't shoot on high volume, so that would be like the next step. He has to be a more willing shooter, not just someone who's taking truly unguarded, uncontested threes. But also, the Bulls just fired their shooting coach, Peter Patton, who I thought was the most competent person in the entire organization. The Bulls hit the third most threes in the NBA this year. They really improved their three-point volume and their three-point accuracy. I pointed to Peter Patton. The hiring of Peter Patton is the reason the Bulls were able to shoot a little bit better this year. Of course, those shots are coming in the flow of the offense more when you don't have DeMar DeRozan playing mid-range ball. But the Bulls fired Peter Patton. So are they going to hire another shooting coach? Are they just looking to save money on the team infrastructure, which is, of course, a staple of any Jerry Reinsdorf team? I don't know. I think, you know, for Giddey to really take the next step in his development, he needs to be a more willing shooter. His accuracy improved. Now let's see the volume go up.
Wow. Okay. No Giannis, no hope. That's great. Ricky, you're just making this beautiful day even better. Appreciate your scouting report. And we'll talk to you soon. We'll see how the Bulls do in the lottery, and then we'll get on when the draft. We'll talk to you when the draft is here. Ricky, thanks for your time and your knowledge. Appreciate it.
Thanks.
Ricky O'Donnell, SB Nation. There it is. Truth. He's just spitting facts there, telling you the truth. I want to encourage you to do this. Listen up, people. Keep listening for your chance to win your way in to see Mully and Haw do their live show this Friday. That's May 16th at the Blue Cross Blue Shield Performance Stage. Be the fourth caller to the contest line 312-540-0670 when you hear this.
The Duck Snort.
Be a part of the studio audience as they get you set for the start of the Crosstown Classic Series with special guests and plenty of Cub Sox chatter. Plus, popcorn will be provided by Nuts on Clark. That's this Friday And it's all brought to you by Blue Cross Blue Shield of Illinois through it all. Take a break. When we come back, we'll talk Bears rookie orientation, coaching orientation camp up there at House Hall with someone who was there, Chris Emma of The Score, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Question for our listeners. Which automaker assembles the most vehicles in the country? Here's a hint. It's the same one that employs the most hourly workers in the country, and the answer is Ford. That's not a coincidence. It's a commitment. A commitment your local Ford stores share. And that is why Ford is now offering employee pricing across their full lineup of vehicles, which means you pay what they pay. So visit your local Ford stores today to take advantage of this great opportunity. Ford Motor Company. From America for America.
Looking for a job is lonely. Endless searching, phone calls that go nowhere, applications that vanish into thin air. What if you could link with dozens of local companies who are hiring right now with just one connection? That's Express Employment Professionals. Find us at expresspros.com. One connection, endless opportunities, and no fees ever for job seekers. Express Employment Professionals. Expresspros.com.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free Samsung 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.